Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Three, two, one. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Wednesday Happier Happy Hour, rolling into it. And we welcome a fine guest, a colleague of ours, a friend of the Devil's. He's Earl Ingram, host of the Earl Ingram Show, originating from WAUK in Milwaukee, heard statewide on the Civic Media Network. Our pal Earl, how you doing, Earl?
Hey, Earl.
Hey, I'm doing fine. Hey, good evening to you, Dom and Crute, but what I just want to say before we get started is, why are we wasting time on this? Are you aware that Taylor Swift is coming to Lambeau Field?
I've heard rumor the Swifties might be at Lambeau because Travis Kelce's coming.
You know, I was listening to you and James and talking about what the media's going to be covering. Well, we know it's a breaking story. Taylor Swift's coming to Milwaukee. But anyway, at Green Bay. But anyway, go ahead.
Earl,
part of the problem, Earl.
We missed that headline, but we did see a column by our mutual friend, James Causey. And I know you know James well. He's a columnist journalist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And he wrote a pretty candid article today, Earl. I know you read it. We verified. I'm going to repeat it for the audience's sake. I'm worn from years of racial slurs, but I'll no longer be silent about bigotry. Now, James told us this piece was sort of a grind. He had to go back to this piece. He had to consider what he wanted to put down on paper. And Earl, I wanted to get your reaction when you first read it.
Well, as you stated, James Causey is a couple decades younger than I am, and I've known him for a long time. And you know, he's certainly now, you know, over 40, and he's no longer got to be concerned about his job as he's getting closer to retirement.
Oh, come on, Earl! We all got to worry about working paychecks.
Well, but he's free now to challenge what he's had to be silent on for a long time. As a guy who writes for a newspaper, he certainly was not free to say the things that he really wanted to say. And so now he's gotten to a point where he's there. And so he can say the things that he probably couldn't have said 10 years ago or 15 years ago, because all those things were happening then, just like they are now. It's nothing new.
Earl, you've been on the radio here with Dom and I since at least when we came on the air, I believe in February of 2017, initially as station owners and colleagues and guys just scrambling to try and figure it out. Earl, from your perspective through the radio show, do you feel like you've been targeted for racism?
No. I haven't been targeted for race through the airwaves. If you ask me if I've been targeted for race in my life, absolutely, but not through the radio station. And, you know, it's a different thing. One of the things is I'm careful about the conversations that I have on the airwaves. I'm also mindful of the fact that I'm a black man in the state of Wisconsin that's only 5% black, and that many of the people who listen, don't look like me, because there clearly is only 5% of the state, and many of the people who are listening don't see a black person physically, you know, every day. And it's a rare opportunity. So it's hard for people who don't get to see people who are different than them, and to really draw conclusions about who those people are other than what they hear somewhere else.
Earl, before I let Dom take a crack at you, I got to give you credit. I learned from you on your radio program in Milwaukee about the housing marches in the late 1960s. And Earl, I grew up paying attention in history class as a kid and here in the great state of Wisconsin. I got to tell you, man, I didn't know about Father Gropey. I didn't know about the housing marches. I didn't know about the redlining that happened systematically in Milwaukee till I learned it from you, sir, right here on the radio. So you got me, Earl?
Yeah, I'm here.
So I guess if there's a question there, Earl, well, it's not a question. Set some context. Tell people what it was like, let's say, a little bit earlier in your life in the community you live in.
Well, so, you know, I was alive when Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement was going on. I was 14 years old, so I was well along the way of becoming a young man when the Civil Rights Movement was taking place in my life. And so it impacted and affected me in a major way. It, you know, black people were locked into a very small area in the city of Milwaukee. We weren't in other parts of the state, but very few of us, because the state of Wisconsin was where the Underground Railroad. Many blacks came through the South and wound up. The Underground Railroad ran through Wisconsin. So you could find sprinkles of some blacks across the state of Wisconsin. But the majority of it is then what it is now, and that's segregated. And so it was that way in Milwaukee until 1967, and the civil rights laws came into play, forced into play by all the riots and all the issues in 1968, monumental year, that forced a society to change things and to at least open the door to American citizens who hadn't been treated in that manner.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Earl Ingram Jr., host on the Civic Media Network, talking a little race today. Earl, certainly appreciate it, responding and reflecting on James Causey's article today in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Earl, you know, one of my fondest memories with you is going around. We did the bus tour of the right. marches from the 60s, and I was your producer, man. I had the gear, making sure all the sound was right, and you were talking to a lot of these folks that were there and marching at the time. And I just, it's still stunning to me that if a bunch of folks walked across the bridge, they're getting, you know, bricks and bottles thrown at them by the community that didn't want them there. Earl, it was very violent. It was very specific. It was very targeted. The differences in the years between, you know, someone like you and a younger James Causey and perhaps some of the younger African-American kids today, how do you think the perception of race has changed, or has it, between those generations and the struggles that go on?
Well, I think it's a great question, Dom, but I will answer it this way. You know, there's this push for people, some people, and especially Republicans in the white community, who don't want history taught. And they don't want history taught because they say they don't want their children to feel bad about the history of this nation. So they want to bury that history because it makes their children feel bad. Well, guess what? On the other side of that equation are, you know, the children of black people who have been mistreated since they've been in this nation and continue to this day. And I fight on a daily basis to try to educate our young people about why the conditions are the way they are with our people and our communities, and why we don't seem to be able to overcome things, and why, you know, we live in ghettos, and why we don't own things, and why we don't have generational wealth. And so you cannot pass up the history and what transpired. And my dad, who lived to be the ripe old age of 93, never got to see justice, freedom, equality in this nation. He fought in the Filipino War. His father never saw freedom, complete freedom. I'll be 70 years old. I'll die without there being any equality in this nation. And my sons I'm pretty sure, who are 40, a little bit above 40, they'll never see it. So we have to face the reality of what is happening in our nation. And since black people only make up 12% of the global of the national population of this nation, it's easy then to look at blacks who only make up 12% of the population as the trouble. And I don't think most people in this nation understand that black people only make up 12% of the population of this nation. So it's easy to point the finger and say that all these bad things that are happening is because of those people. And nobody ever looks to see how those people have been treated and continue to be treated in the nation that claims to be the freest, and a nation that claims to have a Bill of Rights and a Constitution that supposedly says all of us are equal, when we know that's not true.
Earl, politically, we all do politics for a living, kind of junkies right here, and we're going to run short on time here, Earl, so if you got a few more minutes, we'll keep you past.
Absolutely.
But here's my question. Do you feel like the black community is commoditized every 2 to 4 years when the election cycles come around?
Crute, you're 100% correct, and I will say this to you. It's not just Republicans. It's somewhere along the line, people think that this, you know, racists are only Republicans. It's not the case. And so you don't have to, you know, use a racial epithet to discriminate against someone. And Democrats are making a major mistake. They show up in our neighborhoods and in our communities when it's time, you know, for election. And so they understand the value of our vote, because America is kind of split down the middle with whites, Democrats, and Republicans. And if black people really understood their power and their value, because they can be the determining factor and have been in who becomes president of the United States every 4 years.
You know,
there's some people who understand that.
Earl, I'm sorry. I should have known better than to interrupt my elder.
No,
you know, you're the guy that introduced me to the waffles and fried chicken down at Coffee Makes You Black.
Right.
I heard James Causey, somebody stiffed him for a lunch there. I'm like, they missed out on the waffles and the fried chicken. Earl would have never missed out on that lunch. Stick around a little more. Earl Ingram with the Devil's Advocates. Always appreciate you coming around, Earl.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Hold tight, man. We're not saying goodbye yet.
I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Make sure you download the Civic Media app. Take the Devil's Advocates and the Earl Ingram Jr. show with you anywhere you go. You can click on a text, click to call, go to your favorite app store and download the Civic Media app.
Earl, I've known you since you were a young man of 62, I believe. Thanks for sticking around, fella. Hope you're not missing the early bird buffet.
Come on, man.
Earl, we were starting to talk a little politics as it regards to race. And we saw Bob Spindell, who is a Wisconsin elections commissioner and a fake elector, but setting that aside, he's also a Republican congressional CD chairman. And he was out there making the bold brag that they had helped suppress something like 28,000 black and Latino votes in the community of Milwaukee, and that had helped Ron Johnson win re-election in 22 over Mandela Barnes. Earl, what did that look like? What did that sound like?
Well, you know, back in 1965, there was something called the Voting Rights Bill. And right now, in 2021, John Lewis, a prominent black senator who actually marched across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and took a horrible beating as a young college student with many others as they were marching to make it possible for black people to vote, 1965. And now there's, and two years ago, they brought up a new John Lewis voting rights bill. Why? Because rights have been taken away, systematically taken away by conservatives, going back to Scott Walker and others who came up with, you know, you got to have a voter ID, and you know, you can't give people water in line. Doesn't matter if it's 100 degrees outside, you can't give them any water, because if you're doing that, the people don't know any better, and they're not smart enough, so you're trying to lead them down the path to voting, and you're controlling them because they don't know those things themselves. That is horrible. It's deplorable, and yet it still goes on in this country. It is heartbreaking, and my fight and many others like me is to, while we still have some time left, to fight for the children who come after us, because they may not be able to fight the fight that we still can, because we lived at a time when we saw this happening before our eyes.
We recently had Angela Lang from Black Leaders Organizing Community on, Earl. There was a political piece. I think someone wrote a long form article about the door knocking campaigns currently going on, and they invest lots of time and lots of energy into this effort, Earl, and they're out knocking the doors right now, and it's a tough knock for the Democratic Party and the black communities, according to Angela. Earl, why is that, and what do you think changes? And does it change between now and 24?
Well, the reason it is because, and I know Angela well, and I'm sure she knows these demographics, the city of Milwaukee has one of the youngest populations, black populations in the nation. And so it's no longer what it was, where we had a group of voters who were in my age demographic who voted all the time. It's full of young people, many who've never voted, many who are not old enough to vote. And so there's a finite number of people that you have to get. And many of them have given up on voting because they don't believe it's going to change anything for them. They voted for Barack Obama because everybody told them, if you come out and vote for Barack Obama, the Democrats said your life is going to change. Well, that didn't happen. And so many of those people who did vote didn't come out again, because the one time that they thought that they would see change, they didn't see it. And so it's a tough ask to get people, Dom and Crute, who struggle every day to keep a roof over their head, food in their mouths. You know, the community in which we live, black people live, is a wasteland. And people need to understand that. And the last thing people are thinking about is voting. They're thinking about surviving.
Great point, Earl Ingram Jr. And what's the motivation for perhaps, you know, those that are politically, you know, not aligned with the black community to change any of that? Because what if people don't have as much worry about keeping a roof over their head and food in their bellies, and they actually have time to look up and engage in self-governance and vote? Well, it might be detrimental to their political efforts. Earl, city of Milwaukee mayor, Kevler Johnson, a young black man, David Crowley, county executive, young black man, first for both of those jobs of young African-Americans in those positions. The budget's looking good. Things are okay, I think, as far as I can tell. How do you think that impacts the black community? It doesn't matter that David Crowley and Kevler Johnson are in those positions to you, sir.
Well, let me put it this way. It does to, you know, old fogies like myself and others who never thought they'd ever see that in the city of Milwaukee. But the fact of the matter is there have been black mayors, black county executives, blacks in leadership all over this nation, and nothing really changed. There's been black mayors going back 50 years, 60 years, and things did not change, because it's not the man who's in that position. A mayor is, you know, is not God, and he doesn't have unlimited power. you know, he's given some resources and he can't unilaterally make decisions. So it does make some like myself excited to see that after all these decades, there finally is a person of color. But there are many cities across this nation that have had blacks in those positions and nothing ever changed for the citizens.
So, Earl, how do we make those changes? What's the magic word? What's the magic act? How do we get over?
And we can give you like 90 seconds to solve all the world's problems, Earl.
Well, number one, a nation has to accept the fact that all of us are citizens of the nation. And what the Constitution says and what the Bill of Rights says, let's make it a reality. It has never been that. And we know that. And so we've got to push to make that real for all of the citizens. Blacks in this nation are equal citizens by birthright. But yet somewhere along the line, that gets skewed. And the fact that birthrights and that we are citizens of this nation get thrown to the background. And so until we're able to get people to accept the fact that we're all human beings, we're all equal, we all come into the world the same way, breathing in the breath of air, and we all give up the ghost and we die the same way. We don't die black, white, we die as human beings. We don't come into the world as black and white, we come into the world as human beings. Until we can get people to see that, I don't see how any of the other things are going to change.
Earl, last 30 seconds, any big guests coming up this week on the Earl Ingram Show?
I'm working on some things, man. You'll be surprised. You know, I'm going to let you know, Crudy.
Come on, Earl, playing all coy with us.
You big tease.
I got the governor coming on.
Well, I got some things in the works, and I got to talk to you anyway about some advice on some of those things. So,
don't take my advice, Earl. Ask anyone. Don't take Crudy's advice. More Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates. Making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the happier Wednesday happy hour rolling through it. Thank you to our good friend Earl Ingram Jr. Find him each and every morning on the airwaves 8 to 10 a.m. Try him in Milwaukee. Start at WAUK on the Civic Media app or just tune in to the Big 540, the Beast of the East, 540 a.m. Dom, I've got a couple of thoughts here as we lead back into the politics. First and foremost, this one's going to catch you a little funny. I bet you haven't seen this headline yet.
All right. What is it?
GOP eyes vote on Biden impeachment inquiry to shore up their authority.
Okay.
Well, don't they have the authority of Kevin McCarthy behind this action currently? The former speaker said they were going to do it. So they did it.
Really going to do it?
Well, they would need a vote. I think even Mike Huckabee said that could be disastrous for the GOP. But, you know, don't take Huckabee's advice. Go for it, boys and girls.
So the GOP are going to, do the official vote to impeach on the floor to make it official, not just give Comer's committee the authority to call it a impeachment inquiry, actually bring a vote to the floor.
Why do you think they didn't bring it to a vote last time, Dom?
Because they don't have the votes.
Maybe.
But
before we get there, we'll come back. Okay. There. Before we get there, Dom, Donald Trump, your birthday mate and soulmate.
Yeah.
Do you know he has been put under enhanced monitoring under an undisclosed $40 million cash transfer?
Oops. Then as of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
Yeah.
Enhanced monitoring? If the guy slide $40 million around in cash, how closely is he being monitored currently? In the under 91 felonious indictments, I would say, if you could move $40 million in cash around undisclosed immediately, you're a flight risk.
They should put a monitor on him, like literally an ankle monitor, not just someone to monitor his financial transactions.
I love the reporting from one of my favorite sources, the Raw Story. Former President Donald Trump has been placed under double secret probation. I mean, enhanced monitoring after the Trump Organization monitor, Barbara James, identified $40 million in undisclosed cash transfers. This was initially reported by Law 360's Frank Runyon today. Jones alerted Judge Arthur Engoron, who was overseeing Trump's civil fraud trial in New York. The materiality, it's a quote, I'm from someone, not me. The materiality threshold requires that defendants provide notice when entities within the trust make transfers outside the trust with an aggregate value in excess of $5 million, she wrote, adding that we've observed three cash transfers exceeding $5 million each, totaling approximately $40 million, including $29 million to Donald J. Trump, which I have confirmed was used for tax purposes. I thought only the suckers paid taxes, Trump. $29 million in tax bills? Another $5.5 million transfers, transfer, Jones wrote, was used to pay the sexual assault judgment won against Trump by advice columnist E. Jean Carroll earlier this year. And that number, that one's going up, Dom.
It sure is.
Did you see he's out publicly trash-talking her again? Is he trying to triple down on the award?
I mean, I don't know what the motivation is. I mean, he can't stop himself, but as long as he's got the money, he's going to have to continue to pay if she continues to sue him over and over and over again for the same thing. What's the definition of insanity, Mike?
Double secret probation.
Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Well, that's why the GOP is doing it different over in the House now, Dom.
Oh, yeah?
New sheriff in town. Well, not so much in town this weekend because he's going to speak to some sort of crazy white nationalist evangelical group talking about Speaker Mike Johnson.
But Mega Mike.
Here is the latest from the Hill. GOP eyes vote on Biden impeachment inquiry to shore up authority. That's what they've been lacking for up till now. Authority. Yes. House Republicans are weighing whether to shore up their impeachment inquiry by taking a formal vote on the matter with Majority Whip Tom Emmer, mentioned as a possible speaker candidate, wasn't he, Dom?
One time.
Telling members in a closed-door meeting Wednesday they could vote in coming weeks on a move that could bolster the investigation's legal standing. You mean from zero to something more than zero? Because right now you've got the proposition. You got no authority. GOP members told The Hill that Emmer cited pushback from the White House in making his case for the vote. You mean like the White House saying,
go pound sand?
You're going to impeach me? You're going to subpoena me? At least have the authority. Take the vote. Take a public vote. Prove you got the votes. Because, Dom, last time through, if they'd had the votes, they'd have voted for the impeachment inquiry. Would they have not?
They would have. Former Speaker Kevin McCarthy kicked off the impeachment process without a House vote, an action he had criticized when then-Speaker Nancy Pelosi similarly delayed taking a formal vote to start an impeachment process against then-President Trump. In a recent letter, the White House blasted the GOP for moving ahead on the inquiry without a vote, securing the backing from members, repeatedly referring to the impeachment inquiry in quotes, that's funny, and writing that it is lacking constitutional legitimacy. GOP members said Emmer viewed taking a vote as one way to respond to the White House criticism, particularly as the House GOP ramps up complaints that it has not yet received all the information from the administration that it has asked for. Sounds like the White House sent over a response to Comer and Jordan about the impeachment inquiry that former Speaker McCarthy announced, saying that unless it's voted on by the whole House, that they didn't consider it, that it was a valid impeachment inquiry, one GOP lawmaker told The Hill.
I could have told The Hill that, Dom.
Right. This would be the House voting to just simply do what we thought we had done with Speaker McCarthy's declaration. No, what? Because McCarthy declared it? You think that's all you need to do?
Dom, you can't even go to a Catholic bingo night. You can declare bingo, but they still come out and verify. They don't just give you that cash. And this is amongst the Catholics.
Another source in the room. So they are taking temperature on a formal vote on an inquiry. Vote comes as the impeachment inquiry reaches a more difficult phase as lawmakers work to get interviews with high-profile targets, including Hunter Biden, who offered to testify publicly in a public setting rather than the closed-door deposition GOP lawmakers have compelled. He said that a formal vote might strengthen the legal standing of the House. Another GOP lawmaker told The Hill he was just observing that there has been a legal argument made in the past that a formal vote unlocks some additional legal powers of a subpoena and compelling information that maybe deeming an inquiry does not. Yeah, you think? That was more or less the stance the White House took on a November 17th letter to the House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan, GYM Jordan, and House Oversight Accountability Chair James Comer. So, yeah, they're going to really, really do it now? Really, really, really do it now? We have some sound, I believe. Nate, thank you, sir, for doing the hard work. Mega Mike, well, he's going to follow the facts. Don't worry, the gang's on it. Let's play cut one, if you would, please.
Chairman have issued a few dozen subpoenas, and we expect that those would be complied with in an expeditious manner. We're not prejudging this. We will follow the facts wherever they lead.
Yeah, you know, they're going to respond like what? Like Jim Jordan responded to his subpoena, right?
Ignore
what you get now.
Stonewall it.
One more from Johnson on the Biden impeachment. Cut two, please.
While we take no pleasure in the proceedings here, we have a responsibility to do it.
Yeah. Do we?
Yes, much responsibility from the Mega Mike. George Santos also. Let's throw this one out there. I haven't heard this one yet.
I didn't think he was going to survive the week, man.
What? I
mean, there's two expulsion votes scheduled on this guy this week, and he says, I've done the math and I'm not going to survive.
I will not resign. Nate, let's hear what George Santos had to say. Cut four.
I ask that all my colleagues in the House consider and understand what this means for the future. And to set the record straight and put this in the record, I will not be resigning.
Got to convict me first. You got to drag me out of here. It's about due process. Well, maybe, maybe not. Let's hear cut five.
In history, five members of Congress have been expelled. All five had suffered convictions in a court. All five had due process.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a privilege to serve in the House, Mr. Santos. This isn't the court of law. If they don't like it, they can toss your ass.
Do a full ethics inquiry. In fact, they found more criminal acts on George Santos's part than he had been previously charged with federally. So the federales are charging Santos with many crimes. And the ethics committee said, no, wait. There's more.
There's more.
So, you know, due process, schmoo process. You went through full ethics committee report. They found you so guilty. So guilty.
So guilty. I know. He's so guilty. A couple more from Santos. Cut six, please.
Are we to now assume that one is no longer innocent until proven guilty and they are, in fact, guilty until proven innocent? Or are we now to simply assume that because somebody doesn't like you, they get to throw you out of your job?
It would actually take a lot of people not liking you. Like right. Two-thirds, right? Two-thirds for an expulsion vote of a congressperson. That's a super majority of your colleagues that would not like you, sir.
And why don't they like him? Oh, that's right, because he's a fraudster to the nth degree. Last cut from the soon-to-be, perhaps, thrown out of Congress, Santos. Cut seven.
The process in which the Ethics Committee engaged was incomplete, irresponsible, and littered with hyperbole, and littered with biased opinions.
And facts. The facts were the damning part, though. You know what I mean? The rest could also be true, but the facts are what killed you.
Why not address these specific allegations, Mr. Santos? You got your time. You know why he's not? Because, of course, anything he says on the floor of the House, well, he's also indicted, man. They can use that against him. So don't look at what the feds are doing. Don't look at what – no. I'm just going to talk in circles about – I haven't been convicted yet. Why would you possibly kick me out? Mike Johnson, Mega Mike, well, he
– Do they – wait, before you – Don't they need Santos's impeachment vote before they expel him from the body? I mean, it's, you know, at least a little dignity on the way out the door. He can vote to impeach another guy as he's being expelled. That would, you know, really put a nice cherry on top, wouldn't it?
That it would. I mean, if Mega Mike can get his way, that's what he would do.
What if they're one vote short and they needed Santos?
Exactly. Let's see what Mega Mike had to say on this very topic. Cut number 9.
There are people who say you have to uphold the rule of law and allow for someone to be convicted in a criminal court before this
we say who he did that
exacted on someone. That's been the precedent so far. There are others who say, well, upholding the rule of law requires us to take this step now because some of the things that he's alleged to have done, the House Ethics Committee having done their job, are infractions against the House itself.
Against humanity itself.
But Mega Mike, he's got some reservations. I mean, I don't blame you. I mean, you're propping up Donald Trump. Why not George Santos?
Well, Santos helped prop up Mega Mike.
Right. Cut 10, please, Nate.
I personally have real reservations about doing this. I'm concerned about a precedent that may be set for that.
For expelling criminal members who are under indictment after ethics committee did bipartisan investigation, found more evidence of crimes, not just as was alleged, but also crimes against the Congress itself. I can see why you'd feel torn on this.
Let's throw a couple more in here. Cut 11, please, Nate.
Oh, we'll have to wait until after the break for those.
Oh, man. All right. Mega Mike, he has more to say on the possible expulsion of Congressman George Santos. I mean, if Santos is not the embodiment of what the Mega have become, I mean, if he is that, then why would you possibly want him out? Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. We're going to come back. We're going to wrap up some of this Mega Mike Johnson sound and take your calls at 844-967-2789.
Occupy didn't start on Wall Street. It started on our street. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now, 844-967-2789. And stick around. The Maggie Dawn Show coming up next.
Dom, I spoke prematurely. I called Donald Trump your soulmate. And that was a rush to judgment because I've now identified your true soulmate. It's Elon Musk. Did you see the latest? Today, Elon Musk appeared at the New York Times Deal Book Summit. And the SpaceX and Tesla CEO, Elon Musk, had some harsh words for advertisers who are fleeing the Platform X. Go F yourself. And Dom, I would say that makes him a man. Kind of like you, your soulmates.
That guy.
I see a similarity here. Do you not?
I do have some of that in me. That is true. I can't deny that.
Musk made the comment while being interviewed by Andrew Ross Sorkin, speaking about the current advertiser boycott. What's this advertising boycott is going to do is it's going to kill the company, Musk said. Oh, that'd be a shame. Take your $44 billion and flush it down the toilet. Oh, I'd be sad. You know, I'm not a big fan of the Twitter or the X. And the whole world will know that those advertisers killed the company. Talk about projection.
Nothing to do with your, I don't know, management style. Nothing to do with the decisions you made on a corporate basis on what to allow and how to do things. That's all... Oh, that's right. Let's not forget allowing and engaging in anti-Semitic tropes. I mean, you know, maybe there should be some self-reflection, Mr. Musk.
Well, Dom, in response to Disney CEO Bob Iger, who earlier discussed Disney pulling advertising from the platform, that means they took their money back, Dom. Musk didn't hold back. Don't advertise. If someone's going to try and blackmail me with advertising... Blackmail me with money? Go F yourself, Musk said, adding, go F yourself. Is that clear? Hey, Bob, if you're in the audience, that's how I feel. Don't advertise.
Wow.
That's going to win over hearts and minds.
How to make friends and influence people by Elon Musk.
You know, maybe he's not so good at this leadership thing.
Oh, you think?
I'm not clear. I had seen it reported widely, or at least a couple places I'd read. This guy had been enabled. You know, he was always sort of this reactionary jerk. And, you know, because he's rich, he had these people around him that just kept him within the guardrails in some way, shape, or form, or at least kept it from the public's view. But now that he owns the X, the Twitter platform, Dom, his fall from grace has been enormous. This guy has wrecked a viable $45 billion platform in, what, about a year? I mean, it took Trump 4 years to wreck a nation.
Still working on it. 844-967-2789. Well, the leadership of Musk may be in question, but Mega Mike Johnson, well, again, they are debating whether or not to expel George Soros. Johnson told Republicans to vote their conscience. What? Let's hear a couple more from the Mega Mike, the Speaker of the House. If you would please, Nate, number 11.
I personally have real reservations about doing this. I'm concerned about a precedent that may be set for that. So where everybody's working through that, and we'll see how they vote tomorrow.
They're going to vote to expel.
We'll see. And the last, Mega Mike, Speaker Johnson, cut 12.
There are people of good faith who make an argument, both pro and con, for the expulsion resolution for Santos.
The only person arguing against is Santos.
Santos, no, don't expel me. It's because you don't like me. I never did my due process, and this ethics committee, it was biased and full of holes, and F those people anyway. George Santos. I guess tomorrow we'll find out. We'll see.
844-967-2789. The eagerly anticipated call from CJ. How you doing, CJ?
Hey, CJ.
Howdy, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I get the hesitation, not because it isn't certainly justifiable for this guy, but the precedent set is, you know, once you go down this road, because they are in a process of, you know, he's going to be charged criminally.
He's been charged. This is not an abuse, though, CJ.
They're been convicted yet.
This is not an abuse, though, is it, CJ? I mean, it's not like they're going to say, well, I don't like that Jamie Raskin. Let's see if we can scrounge up 67% of the votes. Because, of course, a wrongly accused or rightly accused person from the other party is not necessarily going to get the votes necessary. The two-thirds margin, CJ, is why I believe in this process. This is not an abuse of the process. If it fails, then they'll have to convict him before he's expelled. But if the will is there today, based on the preponderance of overwhelming evidence presented in the ethics report, don't we want his ass out of there? Weren't you with me on throwing the bums out, CJ? He's a bum. Throw his ass out.
Well, you know, I don't think the Republicans are going to be cheering the way the Democrats did for Adam Schiff for lying to the country for 2.5 years.
Oh, so I'm going to cut you off, man. That's got nothing to do. You are so full of malarkey someday, CJ. Adam Schiff lying to the country. That is a figmentation of the Fox News network, dude. He is supported in pretty much every damn thing he said through the Mueller report, through the January 6th report. I mean, dude, there's evidence supporting everything Adam Schiff said. So to censure him for telling the truth was a ridiculous action of Congress. You want to talk about an unprecedented act of stupidity, CJ? You brought it up, Adam Schiff, and his treatment from a hostile Republican Congress.
And Fox News, was found, civilly liable for lying about the Dominion to the tune of $800+ million. And I believe Murdoch testified today in the Smartmatic case. So again, let's not forget, Fox News lies to its viewers.
But you can keep on believing them. Stick around, the man.
Again, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
We keep taking CJ's calls.
I know what the result will always be. Well, thanks for the call, CJ.
The Maggie Dawn Show is next. If she says it, I believe it. And I mean that. Yes. And then the Empowered Caregiver featuring Liza Hellenbrand. And my son's going to be on that show tonight, Caden Crute. Oh, nice. So shout out to Caden. Bet he did a great job. Tune in tonight at 7 o'clock. Keep it locked, Civic Media. Thank you, James Causey and Earl.